here we are. This is Sex, Love, Psychedelics, and I'm your host, Dr. Kat, bringing you psychosexual conversations that will leave you intellectually turned on and hungry for more.
Hey, lovers. If you have been following me for a while, you know that I have a deep respect for ketamine as a therapeutic substance. It's powerful in supporting us in accessing the parts of ourselves that are soft, trusting, and surrendering. I'm being real honest. It's profound. It's so incredible in its ability to help with PTSD, depression, anxiety, and yes, even sensuality. For those of you who didn't think that ketamine could be sensual, I'm going to tell you that I had a full-blown energetic orgasm in my ketamine-assisted therapy training a few years ago. It was divine. Had a whole room of doctors and therapists looking at me like, what that girl on? And yeah, I mean, when you've been a sex goddess, priestess, expert for so many years, it's going to happen like that. Like that's just what's going to happen. You're welcome, academia. Speaking of academia, today we're going to expand this conversation around ketamine and other psychedelics as well, to include how these can support hormonal health as well. So I've got my dear friend Stephanie, who's just a fucking badass and on the forefront of how these substances and in their different qualities can support us. So she's walking us through the science and the research behind why these compounds and the psychedelics can help us towards finding balance when our hormones get out of whack. I think this is some of the conversations that we're not hearing. We're even going to talk about traumatic brain injuries. Like, how many podcasts have you heard somebody actually share the information around this? When I know in my practice, I've had multiple couples come in where one person had this, and yet they don't know where to go. These conversations aren't necessarily happening in the forefront. So here we go. But before we get to Stephanie, I've got an upcoming retreat for you that invites you to exhale. So we're going deep into the exploration of our psyche and sensuality with ketamine. And this is going to be an incredible retreat, unlike what you've experienced before. Learning about how to cultivate your relationship with your sensuality while swimming in the depths of your psyche to best understand the blocks that are in the way. So you'll be a part of a community of fellow femme and women like you who are on this path, which is the best way to cultivating lasting change. Personally, I think we all need that when we're talking about exploring psychedelics. Community as a resource, where we can storytell, where we can be in our authentic expression, when we can be witnessed by one another. Change happens relationally as much as it does inside of us. So I'm putting the link to the landing page in the show notes. And if you even have a ping of curiosity, I want you to reach out to me and let's talk. I'd be so happy to share with you more about what I've got in store here. This will be an intimate group, no more than 10, so that we can all deep dive and have the support that you need. Now to Stephanie Carzon-Abrams. Stephanie is a clinical pharmacologist, community maker, and entrepreneur in the psychedelic space. Through her consultancy, Beyond the Bench, she provides comprehensive guidance and expert advice, offers open access education, conducts incredible research that I'm stoked to talk about here, and supports initiatives seeking to make a positive impact in order to redefine the landscape of healthcare and support access to psychedelics and plant medicines. Babe, I'm so happy to have you on. This is going good.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you. I have had the pleasure to speak alongside Stephanie on a couple of panels now on sex and psychedelics. And one of these was the dusty land of Burning Man and probably the most epic costumes we will ever wear on stage. Actually, you know what? I don't want to say that because we're going to get better.
Oh, yeah. But let's just talk about how we sat on a panel in all sorts of crazy clothing, including underwear.
Yeah, I was in a pink bikini. I was like dressed like Barbie.
Yes. It was awesome. Honestly, what a highlight of 2023. It was my first burn, and that was such a great, I mean, cherry on top. Got to do that with you and the other amazing women.
Yeah, yeah. And when I hear you talk, I find myself nodding and snapping like the whole time. I'm like, yes, girl. Yes, girl. Yes.
Uh-huh. I feel the same about you. I feel the same way about you.
Yeah, yeah. And one of the things that has really gotten me, I think instantly I was like, we need to be friends after the first talk we did, because you talk a lot about how psychedelics can support our issues of hormones, which in a world where, you know, there is talk about sex and psychedelics, I think that is one conversation that's oftentimes left out. And yet hormones are at the root of our sexual health. Like, it's what gives us libido. It's what gives us these erections, you know, like if we aren't healthy here, then we can't expect ourselves to function or enjoy it. So maybe let's start there. Like, in regards to the different challenges that we can have in hormones, you know, I'm thinking like menstruation, I'm thinking of autoimmune issues, menopause, men being able to maintain erections. How do you see that psychedelics are playing a role?
Yeah, definitely. And I'd love to just walk it back just a little bit, just to, I guess, explain where my interest and fascination with it all kind of stemmed from. So as women, and I'll speak to the female experience first, because I am a woman. As women, our hormones ebb and flow and go up and down throughout our lives, puberty, menstruation, pregnancy, post-pregnancy, pre-menopause, peri and post. So there are a lot of changes, right? And currently, you know, if we experience an imbalance of sorts, we go to the doctor, we get a prescription for birth control. And that might work for a lot of us. I've definitely been one of those people with maybe an abnormal menstrual cycle for a little while. My solution was hormonal birth control. But if you look at other cultures across the world, they've turned to different types of plant medicines to support this hormonal journey, right? And these plant medicines have been integrated into common modern medicine as well. It's just that here in North America, that really isn't the trend. And we look at people through time, and of course, people have turned to nature. They've looked at medicinal plants and alternative medicines, right, to support their wellness journeys or their hormone wellness journeys. But it's not part of our modern day, everyday practice in medicine.
Right.
But lately, I feel like there is this return to nature, and people are not only looking at nature, but they're looking at what other things can I try, because it can't just be that hormonal birth control is my only option. Mm-hmm. And so enter psychedelic therapies and plant medicines here that are not only showing support for the physical physiological issues that we're facing, but also the mental well-being, emotional piece that comes with facing struggles that have to do with sexual health and hormones, right? And so it's really awesome to see that some psychedelics are providing the actual physical treatment, but also the emotional support through therapy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so a couple of things that I found in research, for example, are different therapies like psilocybin therapy that's being researched to support menstrual cycles, interruption of the menstrual cycle, and even pre-menopause or perimenopause, right? So in our lives as women, our estrogen cycles will ebb and flow. There's two rises, right? So they're going to rise twice. So the first time is going to happen in your mid-follicular phase. So the follicular phase is when you're preparing to ovulate. So there's this rise in estrogen, and then after ovulation, your estrogen is going to drop. And then there's a second rise during the mid-luteal phase, the luteal phase being preparation of the uterus for pregnancy. So your uterine wall lining is going to thicken, right? And so there's a rise, and then there's another drop after your menstrual phase. So what's really interesting is that estrogen and serotonin are working together in the body. And so a couple of things that we've realized is that as women, when we interact with psilocybin, when we engage in either a microdose or a macrodose, however we're using it, the effects can actually be potentiated by the where we are in our cycle, right? So if there is a rise in estrogen, it could actually potentiate the effect of the psilocybin. It could make the experience more intense.
So the estrogen affects the psilocybin?
Yes, because, well, it's the mechanism of the psilocybin. So the psilocybin, when we ingest it, it converts into psilocin and it binds to those serotonin receptors.
Yeah.
So it's mimicking the effect of serotonin binding to its receptor, right? So it's causing, I guess, a cascade of events, right, that happen once serotonin would bind to its receptor. And essentially, when you have this like rise of estrogen, the estrogen and the serotonin is actually what's interacting.
Okay, so does it make? How does that end up manifesting, or what does that look like in us?
It could actually make your experience with psilocybin more intense because it's intensifying the effects of the serotonin in the body.
Interesting. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's something that's kind of being studied. It needs to be studied further because, you know, this is like a psychedelic renaissance, right? Like there wasn't a ton of research for so many years, but now people are experimenting. People have funding to try different things and explore different avenues. And I think with time, we're going to be able to shine more light on exactly how this is working.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So keeping this in mind for all of us who are tracking our cycles, to know that your experience will shift if you, you know, depending on the time of month, that your microdose may not feel so much a microdose.
Yeah, that can happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So psilocybin, is that supporting our menstruation? Like, you know, in the reverse. So we see estrogen impacting the psilocybin, but then how about psilocybin with our menstruation or with our symptoms of that?
Right. Right. So we have this access in our brains that's we refer to as like the HPG axis. It's the hypothalamic pituitary gonadal axis, right? So the hypothalamus is your center of control in your brain. Your pituitary gland is this little pea-sized gland at the base of your brain that essentially will release hormones when it receives a signal, right? And your gonads are your sexual hormone glands, right? So what we've realized is that the effects of binding to these receptors for serotonin actually acts on this axis. So there's an actual relationship between our whole sexual hormone experience and serotonin. And so how it can support, we've seen that certain women in life experience an interruption of their menstruation. It's called amenorrhea. Mm-hmm. And there's actually a study, I can't recall how many women were in the study, but there was a study out of Johns Hopkins that showed that engaging in psilocybin brought back women's periods. And some women have cysts on their ovaries as well. It's called polycystic ovary syndrome. And they can also experience irregular cycles, interruption of their cycle. And so this study is trying to figure out, like, can we use psilocybin to support women's cycles when they experience interruption or dysregulation? And so far, that's been a positive result. So I'm really looking forward to see if there's going to be follow-up studies here.
Yeah, this is really interesting because as I've worked with clients, and then also PCOS runs in my family, that's an estrogen dominance, meaning you have an excess of estrogen. And so that makes me really curious to see if that, you know, that effect with somebody who has lower estrogen and having, you know, perhaps amenorrhea or something other than, how does that have the same effect of helping it? Maybe that's just a question. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's just a question. Yeah, I don't think we have that yet, but it's interesting. I think a lot of women are self-experimenting as well.
Yeah.
I think that I've been reading a lot about like traditional ancient practices.
Yeah.
You know, I've kind of, I've been taking a deep dive into the Huichol Indians of Mexico and what they've used in terms of plant medicines to support their hormones or to support just like their journey through puberty and how they introduce it to children. And honestly, more research is needed, but here are these longstanding traditions with people who have integrated these practices into their lives, and we could really learn from them. So mm-hmm. I encourage people to go and read because there's a lot online. It's amazing how much you can find, but also, you know, seek out some of these people who have longstanding experience and ask them questions.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a self-exploration, you know, like I love to read and I love to dabble and try things. And mm-hmm. As long as it's coming from a lens of safety, where we're speaking with our physicians and our healthcare providers to make sure that we're doing things that are good for us, right? And not doing anything too risky. I think it's an awesome adventure.
Yeah, I think that is the question. Yeah, I think people want to be safe in this. Our friend, yours and mine, our colleague, Michaela DeLamico.
Yes.
Yeah, I had an epic podcast with her. I'm going to encourage everybody to tune into that one if this is the question that you're in, especially for mamas who struggle with the stress or postpartum. Definitely check out that episode. She's created a big community around people who are in the inquiry and the research of that. Do you think that psilocybin in regards to hormones is the champion here? Or do you see ketamine or MDMA? Do you see roles that they play cannabis in this
In
hormones? Yeah.
I'm glad you asked that. So because ketamine is our one legal, I guess, psychedelic type medicine that's currently in practice. And because it's been in practice in medicine for so long, there's a lot of research and scientific data about it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just been a lot more interest and funding in terms of studies. And so I've seen applications for PMDD, which is premenstrual dysphoric disorder. It's a more intense and severe, I guess, version of PMS, which you know, a lot of us experience. And I've seen it in applications and studies for postpartum depression. I've seen some stuff about breastfeeding. So there's actually a lot, there's a lot of research out there. And so just for a little bit of background, what's interesting about ketamine is that it's a little bit different from the other antidepressant pharmacological agents out there. Instead of targeting serotonin, norepinephrine, and dopamine, it acts on your glutamate system, which is another neurotransmitter.
Mm-hmm.
And it increases synaptic plasticity and releases of other neurotransmitters. And it's what's interesting about it and what makes it so amazing in therapy is that it has amazing effectiveness in treatment-resistant cases, and it seems to work a lot more efficiently.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens with PMS is that we know that depression isn't just an imbalance of different neurotransmitters. We know that it's beyond the chemical components that traditionally, you know, the medical literature and science has shown. We know that mechanism is far more complex. However, we have noticed that people who experience depression or have depression symptoms have lower levels of glutamate. And so it seems that the ketamine can actually support levels by helping them rise.
Mm-hmm.
And so what people are trying now is that before they go into their period, before that week starts and they start experiencing those first symptoms, they actually go in for a session of ketamine therapy. And that is really helping them with mood regulation and the depression and the low energy irritability that can accompany PMS and PMDD. That being said, I think, you know, a lot of women deal with PMS and we're able to navigate it. So I see that this therapy is being used more for the severe version, which is PMDD. Yeah. And traditionally, I think we've been using SSRIs to manage this. And I think the effectiveness is only 60 to 70%, which is pretty low. So this could actually be a solution that could really support women.
Yeah. And it's more accessible to more populations. You know, I think I've read the studies about moms who are breastfeeding being able to do ketamine for postpartum depression because it flushes out of the system in like less than 24 hours, and then they can go back to breastfeeding. And
yeah, it has a short half-life.
It has a short, yeah. And so how can we help our mamas who really don't have that much resource around this stuff?
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. There's actually a study. It was like 650 women that were undergoing a C-section. And 10 minutes after childbirth, they gave them a dose. I think the dose is something like half a milligram per kilogram, right? And there was a control group, and there was a noteworthy reduction in the occurrence of postpartum blues and depression amongst the women in the ketamine group. And that's just one dose 10 minutes after childbirth. And like you said, because it is fast acting with a short half-life, I think the recommendations are you can wait between 6 and 12 hours before breastfeeding again. And of course, if you want to err on the side of caution, you can definitely wait a little longer. But it's a drug that is relatively safe and has been in use for such a long time for people of all ages. It doesn't come without risk, of course, like, you know, many substances and drugs. But again, this is another promising application to support mamas.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I love that. So we're talking about, you know, the impact of this on our estrogen, psilocybin on estrogen and ketamine in regards to the depression and the glutamates. What about some of these hormone challenges that we might experience as a result of trauma, things like autoimmune issues, Hashimoto's is a big one that I see, endometriosis, I see a lot. And as a trauma therapist, I see a lot of, you know, root relationship with unprocessed trauma impacting the health of our nervous system. But I'd be curious from your perspective, how these psychedelics might be able to help with that from that perspective.
Yes, I've definitely seen a lot of data and literature around trauma, around endometriosis and pelvic pain. I haven't taken a deep dive into the autoimmune yet, but I know that it's of great interest, and I think it is a promising application and field. As you probably know, women who've experienced any kind of trauma or abuse, whether it's emotional or physical, tend to have a higher risk for pain, chronic pain, pelvic pain, and even endometriosis. And I think the most promising avenue right now in terms of healing that trauma and also dealing with that chronic pain, which also ends up being very psychosomatic. Like, of course, you can have true pain from physical trauma, right? But after that physical trauma or the injury has healed, what you're left with is this emotional pain, feels like physical pain. But when it's psychosomatic and emotional like that, how do you treat that? It's not pain medication, right? It's not high doses of any kind of pain medication. You'd have to get to the root cause, as you know, and that's the amazing work that you do. And I think that MDMA therapy is going to be huge and integral for this. The way MDMA works on serotonin, and we know that increases in serotonin not only helps you mitigate pain, but those feelings of love and positivity and joy brings you to a point where you can trust yourself in this healing process. You can trust your therapist in this healing process. Yeah. And it's opening you up so that you can extinct that fear. You can bring down these learned defense instincts. You can break the patterns that aren't serving you. And trauma is not just any negative thing that might have stayed with you through your life. It's it's a negative experience that has essentially misshapen your response to any kind of stimulus, right? And it's a pattern now that is ingrained in you, and you need to open up this window of opportunity where you can relearn.
Yeah.
And you need to have trust and acceptance for yourself, and you need to be bonded, and you need to be trusting of the facilitator or the therapist that is accompanying you on this journey.
Yeah.
And MDMA is doing that.
Yeah. And so ketamine.
Ketamine. Yes. Yeah. And ketamine too. It's, yeah. It's amazing. It's bringing you to a place where, just like in childhood, you're a sponge for anything new. It's almost bringing you back there so that you can, you know, kind of open the window and be like, oh, there's that over there. I'm going to go through it and I'm going to relearn this.
Mm-hmm.
And alleviating the emotional attachment and burden that accompanies a negative memory or an experience is what you need to process, right?
Yeah.
So I think that huge, very hopeful. I think just in general, when I'm discussing all of these, I feel like just a lot of hope. I think a lot of people think that researchers and providers, facilitators in the psychedelic community are treating psychedelics as this panacea, but it's not. There are a lot of different applications because psychedelics have this power to reshape your mind. Reshaping our minds is what we need as humans in order to deal with the human experience, whether it's great joy or great sorrow. We need to turn to this experience, to these altered states of consciousness, sometimes to break through. So it's not that it's our answer to everything. It's just that there are so many different afflictions and things that we can experience through our lives, and we sometimes need additional support. And if you look at plant medicines, like, we have evolved with them, we've evolved using them. So we need to continue working with them in that very same way.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a tool that, in the state of flexibility of our minds, how are we both taking advantage of that and utilizing the container of someone holding that for us so that we can do that work? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That therapy work.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is there a difference from what you've noticed? Is there a difference between the effect of psychedelics and MDMA, ketamine included, on gender?
Yeah, I don't think I can speak to any specific data, but I think if we just talk about, you know, the experience of being a male or the experience of being a female, it's just different, right? So, and I think that it could even vary within the same gender. You know, I think it's just our experience with it, and what are we bringing into that experience? What have we lived so far that we're bringing with us? I think that, as I mentioned before, we tend to look at hormonal imbalance and hormonal health very closely for women, just because it changes so much throughout our lives. But men experience, you know, struggles and difficulties with their hormones as well. It's not talked about as much, but it's definitely very prevalent and definitely very important. I think what's interesting for men is that, if we're talking about psychedelic therapy, when men struggle with ED or performance anxiety, it's usually intertwined with egocentric patterns or self-consciousness or just perceptions of self that need to be worked on. And I think there's an opportunity to address all of that. And while I don't think that a psychedelic could go physically heal a root cause for erectile dysfunction, I think that if there's any kind of emotional piece that's wrapped in, you can definitely address it.
Yeah. Yeah. And all of these things interweave with one another. It's not black and white. Yeah.
No.
I have so many clients who are like, no, it has to be a health issue. It has to be, you know, something in it. And that all their tests come back, they're normal. And we're like, so are you welcome to come to therapy with me? It's let's look at some of these emotional, you know, mental conditioning of the body, or even like how we define sex and culture, you know, to be like, you have to have a hard cock, you have to be able to orgasm, you have to be able to. And it's like, well, what if we expand that definition to include so many other activities and energetic experiences and sensual movement of the bodies, and just find orgasmic pleasure in that rather than fixate on this quote unquote, like functioning of this right. image. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. It goes beyond how the body functions and how the body is supposed to function, right?
Right, right.
I know that you and I touched on this in the panels that we did together, and I'm sure we'll talk about it here, but just love and connection and redefining what intimacy is really important. And I think that some people don't even venture down there unless they have someone to guide them. And so I think that, you know, couples therapy or even just engaging in activities with your partner that allow you to start exploring these topics of being more adventurous or understanding each other better in terms of what your desires and fantasies are. A lot of people are shy or they're embarrassed to share about what turns them on, right? So it's not only a self-exploration, but it's an exploration between you and your partner. Some people think that in these realms of psychedelic therapies, especially with MDMA, it just helps you unlock the door a little bit, mm-hmm. right? It helps you get over that hump of being too embarrassed or addressing a subject that you might think is taboo.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that MAPS applied to the FDA for MDMA therapy for PTSD, but I know they're looking at couples therapy next, and
yeah,
that's going to be incredible.
Anne Wagner does some incredible research. I've been following her, listening to her lectures, met her at Psychedelic Science Conference, and she's got some amazing work going on there. And so we're talking about psychedelics and you know, the power of how they can help with our intimacy. But then there's a lot of population who either doesn't want to use psychedelics or, you know, the very real fact that it's illegal in most places in the world. But there's still plants who hold the medicine to support us in the symptoms that might be impacting our sex life. You know, things like lack of energy or like what you were saying, the hormone challenges and things like that. So let's talk about legal plant medicines and how that can also sure. be helpful here.
Sure, sure. I think that's a really good topic, because it's also a time where people are starting to turn away from alcohol a little bit more, because I mean, I have no issue with alcohol when it comes to, you know, like enjoying the spirit, right? But there's a lot of misuse with alcohol. People use it to just disconnect from their bodies when that's not what we need. We need to be connected to our feelings, feel our feelings. And it also creates, you know, distance between us and others. And what's really interesting is that not only is there this like non-alc movement where there's a ton of non-alcoholic beverages that taste good, but people are creating blends, elixirs,
yeah.
teas, tonics, all sorts of things, right? That are infused with plants that are not only functional adaptogenic, but also psychoactive, not psychedelic, psychoactive, and that are legal. I just hosted a dinner with my friend Joey. It's our Mount Mushmore Higher Elevations dinners. We did one for the Mudwater team last week. And we brought on this team called Good Bar, and they craft the most amazing non-alc elixirs, like infused with mm-hmm. all kinds of amazing plants and herbs that you're buzzing when you're,
oh my God,
you
know,
you
true.
Feel something, you feel something, and
yeah.
you're just like, but I'm not drunk, right? Like I'm still tapped in, I'm present, and I'm having a good time and I feel good. And they could be things that are gonna, you know, like elevate your mood and stimulate you and give you energy, but they could also relax you and mellow mm-hmm. you out. So you can choose your vibe. And it's amazing. And I think mm-hmm. that's a great avenue to explore.
Yeah.
So things like Damiana, Kana, I love Kana. I don't mm-hmm. know if you're familiar with
very
that,
familiar. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I love it so much. South African plant that's been used for centuries. by the Khoisan people, used to ground, to alleviate, you know, feelings of anxiety. Mothers would give it to their babies if they had colic. It's very safe. It's not neurotoxic. In large doses, it can feel like a roll from MDMA. Like, people even refer to it as nature's MDMA. So I think it's cool that within the realms of recreation and being social, there are other things that we can engage in that give us that feeling of energy and motivation and uplift us, so that when we're going out and we want to engage with people, we mm-hmm. feel that boost, because sometimes we want that. We want that yeah. feeling. It's fun. Like, there's no problem with it, but it's a way more conscious, healthy way to dabble in those mm-hmm. experiences. Mm-hmm. And I also think that it could be really fun when it comes to your relationship or your partnership and romantic love and intimate love. I think there's really fun ways to deepen connection. I can see all kinds of ways that you can have a date night. You can, you know, engage with Kana or Damiana. You could create your own blends, or, you know, you can purchase blends that are created by herbalists, and you can have a whole night around that. You know, you could sit there and, you know, drink this awesome elixir and like share about some like fun fantasies or like things you want to try. But you could also just drop in and talk about non-sexual things, right? You could talk about your love. You could talk about your life. And I think there are ways that you can really bond. And that's the root of it. It's feeling bonded to yourself, which is the foundation of being bonded to someone else. Or if you have self-love, then you can give love, you can receive love. And, I encourage people to explore some of these legal plants and herbs, because I think it could also kind of bring out something that maybe you can't bring out by yourself, and that's okay. You know, sometimes we need that little boost, but there are healthier ways to do it, right?
Yeah. Some of the reasons why we don't go into intimacy is, we're tired. You know, in this really fast-paced world, we're tired. We've got a lot of inflammation. We, you know, like, and adaptogens helps with the hormones from that perspective. You know, if we're thinking about, what are some of the blocks? These are very supportive of them. Some of my favorite ones that friends of mine have created, Layla Martin has her mood line, her mood supplement line. It's really good, like really good. I used one, I think it was called Play, and I was like the biggest flirt all night. I mean, I normally
am. So fun.
But it was like, I had just gotten off of a plane. I know. I just got off and off something. I was like, oh, I'm floppy. I don't have any energy. And then I took some and I was like, So, you know, Layla Martin's mood line. Super Mush has a sex gummy.
It's powerful.
Yeah.
I told Allie this one time. I ate a lot of her gummies and I had some dreams. And that was not a coincidence. I had some very lucid dreams. Let's just put it that way.
Oh my God. I love that. Yeah. And they also have a whole line of, they have a, like a relaxing spray, and they have an energy spray and immunity spray. And I use all of them often. Mm-hmm. They all work really well. There's, might be on one of them right now. And then I think
the sleep gummies yesterday.
Did you? Yeah.
Super Mush ones. There's also Function, FUNGTION. They have a Kana elixir that I really love.
Nice.
Yeah.
I've had theirs, and I've also had Kai's. So that's K-A with an apostrophe. Not apostrophe, what is that?
Exclamation mark. Yeah.
And that one is a really good Kana brand in chews and in liquid. And Kana is one of those where it's like the quality of some companies aren't very good, but the potency of these ones are really good. I recommend. Yeah.
Yeah. There's also one that I love, Kana Extract Co. They work, they have like a powder, so it's concentrated and you need the tiniest little scoop. 25 milligrams is like the small spoon right under the tongue. You feel that pretty instantaneously. It's really fascinating because it is like a mood boost, but you don't get this like jittery, hyperactive energy. It has this grounding effect as well. And I think that's what's so amazing about it. Mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of Kana.
And like these, access to these, you know, it reminds us we don't have to blow ourselves out with macro doses of whatever and escape. We can, I mean, you know, that's fine. You don't have no judgment here. You can do that too. But it also reminds us that we can do these and there's power in subtlety, in subtle changes.
Yes, I do. That's so funny you said that. We did a little game at the dinner last week and I had these little mushroom tarot cards and they each had a mushroom and underneath they had a word. And the one that I pulled was subtlety. And I've been thinking about that a lot. That's so funny you say that. It's true because life doesn't require you to make these big 180 changes. Like sometimes, yes, but that can be all too drastic and might not lead you to what you're trying to achieve anyways. And so I do think that there's a lot of power in the small, in the subtle, and we can glean a lot from small, low, or micro doses. And I always tell people who are experiencing microdosing for the first time or trying it, right, to journal. You should keep track of everything. It's integration work is not just with macro medicine journeys. Integration is life. And if you're integrating new things into your life, I think that journaling is a very powerful tool to keep track of how you're feeling and process. And the most amazing thing is if you've been journaling for, you know, a week or a month or whatever it is, if you look back and you kind of look at your timeline and your story, I think that's also pretty incredible. Even if it is, you know, again, like a small little 2-sentence journal entry on a daily basis, I think that we could learn a lot from ourselves in these situations.
Yeah. And if we have the desire to change our, like, this is the key. You got to look inside. We got to lift the hood and see what's happening underneath.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
So as we're coming to near the end of this conversation, there is one more topic that I know you do a lot of research around and you advocate a lot around. You brought it up in our Burning Man conversation, the Burning Man panel. And the reason why it stuck in my mind is because I was like, wow, nobody's really talking about that. I haven't heard somebody talk about that. And it's the concept of traumatic brain injuries, TBI. I have had clients have TBI and see how it impacted their relationship. You know, they were more irritable. They weren't able to function as quickly. They weren't able to, they had to process things slower or feel jarred with processing. And so the work that you do, I want to hear about that because there's people out there who are getting frustrated with their partner because their partner's not operating the same way that they did.
I'm glad you brought this up. So traumatic brain injury is very prevalent. You have all kinds of people who experience all kinds of things and end up with a head injury, whether you're an athlete, whether you're a veteran in combat, a first responder, but also you can just slip and fall, right? You can have a car accident, like anything can happen. And while there is a lot of research to help people heal or to try to find a way to heal from the brain injury, we haven't found the solution yet, but there is a lot of promising research, notably Ibogaine therapy, which seems to be one of the most promising one in the realm of psychedelic research. A paper was just published early January out of Stanford. It is really promising because it's the first treatment that could potentially change the course of how we treat a traumatic brain injury. Currently, it's a mix of symptom managing drugs, right? So we're going to symptom manage the the depression that might happen, the anxiety, everything that's related to this like shift in quality of life that happens after a brain injury, because we become, like you said, more sensitive to certain stimulus. So like sensitive to light, sensitive to sound, we're not sleeping well. And eventually this is going to snowball and it's going to make us more irritable and moody, and it's going to negatively affect quality of life. So like I said, it's a lot of symptom management, but I don't think it's adequate. And a lot of people in the field don't think it's adequate long-term. we need something that's going to actually treat the physical trauma, and also the emotional trauma that comes with the injury. And so it's really interesting to see this research with Ibogaine. Something that's really impressive about it is that there were no negative outcomes. There were no adverse events in this study. It also helped with suicidal ideation, which is huge because that's very treatment resistant. And to the point that you were making about what people don't often talk about is that what happens as a result of the injury, either through the physical impact or just from brain hemorrhage and increasing the intracranial pressure, is a shift on that HPG axis that we talked about. So the hypothalamic pituitary gonadal axis, but also on the adrenal axis, also on the somatotropic axis. And so that's going to affect how the body is producing hormones, the sexual hormones that affect our libido, our fertility, and even our menstruation. It's very common that people who have even mild brain injuries, but especially in the moderate to severe, they'll see interruption of their menstruation, erectile dysfunction, infertility, decreased libido. We've also seen the inverse, where people become hypersexual as well. And when you're the partner or family member, loved one of a person who's going through this, it could be very difficult. And so what I'm trying to do with research and education and, you know, speaking publicly about these topics is just to sensitize people to this issue. I would love for people who experience traumatic brain injury to speak to their physicians, to their therapists about it, because they need to put it on the radar. It must not be a taboo subject that people shy away from. It's really important. I've spoken to people who've told me that their physician didn't bring up their sexual health until 1 or 2 years, even post TBI. And it's not, it's nobody's fault. It's just that it's not something that's focused on in medical practice or even in education. So it's not top of mind, but we can bring it to be top of mind, right? And I would just love to see protocols coming out and just more education so that all kinds of healthcare providers can support their patients more readily. And I think that there's different ways that people can support their healing journey post TBI. I have a little list here that I'm going to pull up and share with you of things that seem to be working. So, what happens after a brain injury is that there's an imbalance and all sorts of, you know, neurotransmitters and chemicals, but also things that are essential to our cognition, our focus, our hormones. So that's BDNF, glutathione, magnesium levels in the brain will drop sharply after a concussion, and so do zinc levels. So supplementing with magnesium, zinc, vitamin D, a B complex, glutathione, and even acetylcysteine, which is a precursor to glutathione, could be really, really helpful. And this isn't going to be a magic, you know, solution, but these are things that your brain require in order to heal faster. And the same thing with protein. So engaging in a high protein diet. There's a lot of research, like I said, looking at ibogaine therapy, but there's even research looking at psilocybin, because psilocybin can have an anti-inflammatory effect. And we're not looking at these psychedelic therapies for the acute phase of a brain injury. The brain needs to heal in a functional pattern, right? We need to give it all the tools to return to its baseline. So we don't want to alter states of consciousness and alter the regular processes of the brain when it's trying to heal. But for post-acute phase, right, maybe 1 or 2 or 3 years out, and even further down the line, these psychedelic therapies could be very promising. So lots of research still needs to go into it. I think that the therapy component, the integration therapy that accompanies psychedelic medicine, is super key in this. It's not just about taking a drug, a substance, or a psychedelic. You know, it's really the combination of both. But again, it just, I think I'm very hopeful. And I think as long as we continue to educate people to come forward about what they're experiencing, it'll begin to be more of a priority amongst the medical community.
Yeah, I love that. I'm all for that. How can people find out more about you, about the research you're doing, get involved in your communities?
So my website is beyondthebench.life, and I post all sorts of things there, blog articles, things that interest me, research that I'm currently conducting, and there's a lot of resources. You could also write to me through the contact page. So if there's any questions or people want to explore some of these topics and go deeper, I'm always happy to chat and connect.
Yeah. Yeah. This is amazing. Full breadth of so much information, you know, from the science to the, yes, to the folk, to the, you know, everything in between.
I know.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much.
Well, that was fun. Thanks for tuning in, lovers. And if you want to experience more ecstasy and sexual liberation, head over to sexlovepsychedelics.com and learn about how you can join me for any one of my online or live events. And while you're there, grab my free guide on sex and psychedelics. Remember, this podcast is for entertainment and educational purposes only. Please contact your healthcare provider and local law before pursuing any of the products or psychedelics discussed. And one final note here. I make this show specifically for you. If you're loving the show, then be sure to leave me a review in iTunes or Spotify to let me know. Happy to be here and happy to serve. I'll see you next time on Sex, Love, Psychedelics.